a rock, you must have been aware, or at least seen some stories about it, that it was the 50th anniversary of Martin Luther King's assassination. It was all over the news, there were parades. I commented this week that there was this picture on the cover of the AJC that showed downtown, showed the Georgia Capitol, really, downtown Atlanta, the day of the original march after his assassination, I guess it's the day of his funeral. And this, you know, hundreds of thousands of people were marching down the street in downtown Atlanta and were turning in front of the Capitol building. And if you go back and look at that picture now, notice what you don't see. The Capitol back in those days sat there. There weren't all these huge high-rise buildings engulfing it. There was a huge parking lot across the street in front of the Capitol. Not there anymore. All these big buildings that now dwarf it weren't there in those days. It just looks like this huge Capitol building sitting out there almost by itself. And so this week, they were doing similar things to commemorate those days, that time, and what was happening then, the 50th anniversary of his assassination. And it reminded me of one of Steve Hartman's On the Road stories that Jennifer happened to watch the other night. And she was listening to it. She could actually do it on her phone, and she's scrolling through and listening to these stories, and I'm laying next to her, and it catches my attention. This particular story on this particular week. Hartman had recently traveled to Somerville, South Carolina, and met a woman there named Annie Cadell. When Annie had moved into her predominantly black neighborhood, most people didn't think too much about it until she started putting up Confederate flags. Her black neighbors understandably got upset about such an action. They couldn't believe this was going on, but she wouldn't back down. Even when people tried to talk to her about it, tried to help her to understand why this might be offensive to some people in the neighborhood, but she would not back down. It was her right, she said, to put up those Confederate flags in the middle of this black neighborhood. The neighbors protested, so Annie invited counter-protesters. And you can imagine what they were like. The woman across the street said it was terrible when she went out to get the paper in the morning. She had to look at those flags every day when she walked out of her house. That was what was staring her in the face. She said her husband refused to go out and get the paper anymore because that's what was there. Pretty soon, the neighbors started putting up fences to block the view. So Annie put up a taller flagpole and a bigger flag. She was brazen about it. But then something happened. Annie had a change of heart. Literally. Annie had a heart attack. And after recovering, she discovered that she had a whole different perspective on life and the people around her, and her neighbors in particular. When you have a heart attack and you're being told you're not going to live very long, you're facing your own mortality, Annie said, I needed to clean up my messes that I've been making by being so stubborn. And I have asked everyone within earshot to forgive me. She started with one of her fiercest critics, Lewis Smith, the director of the local community resource center. She took down the big flag and folded it up and presented it to him. And he was stunned. Sometimes it takes a serious action to happen to you before you see your own actions on others. She said, before she only saw the Confederate flag through her own eyes and what she thought it was. But now she says she cares more about her living neighbors and about her dead relatives. And that was Steve Hartman's story. A change of heart, a big change of heart, really. A new beginning for this woman, seeing things from a whole new perspective. When something big changed the course of her life. These are some of the same things with which the community gathered around the risen Christ were wrestling with, struggling with in some ways. Last week, you may have noticed at the end of Mark's description of Easter morning that the women, quote, fled from the tomb for terror and amazement had seized them. And they said nothing to anyone, for they were afraid. This wasn't just a little twist in the road, a little different angle on things. This was such a shocking change to life as they knew it that it says they were terrified. They were amazed. They were afraid to say something to other people because they were afraid. This was a shocking turn of events in their lives, and everything was different. When we read the stories in the New Testament about the earliest communities of believers gathered together after Easter, and in the days and the months and the years ahead, we cannot miss that they were scrambling to figure things out after Easter. Everything had changed. They now saw things from a whole new perspective. It was as if a light had come on for the first time. They now experienced the presence of Christ, the risen one, in whole new ways, in everything that they did, the way that they lived their lives every day, in their community, as they lived it out together. They were learning to live all over again. Our call to worship today points to some of those things that were going on in that early community of believers. Amazing things were happening. Different things from what they had ever experienced before. In these days after Easter, we ourselves will begin a series in 1 John. These letters came from what is now referred to as the Johannine community, from which came the Gospel of John, as well as these three letters. It is believed that these early Christians started out in the synagogues, as everyone did then in the early Christian church. They started out in the synagogues, and in the case of John's community, it's thought that it happened somewhere around Ephesus. But due to their beliefs in Jesus, they were soon kicked out of the synagogues, and they began to meet as their own community of believers. There were many things that were distinct about their beliefs, but probably the two biggest ones were clearly their high, almost philosophical views of Christ and who Christ was and what Christ was about. If you think of that first chapter of John, that the Word was with God and was with God in the beginning and all of that, that's distinct to this community of John. And the other thing was their strong belief in love as the basis of their community. Later we'll get to those famous verses in 1 John about living in love in our community and that God is love. Perhaps one of the most famous pieces of Scripture. And so they sought to understand together better the gospel, the implications of Jesus' resurrection, and how to live out the way of new life and love within their community together. And sometimes, as we all do, they had their own disagreements about all of this, which we find in these letters. So as we begin the same journey ourselves, let me touch on just a few points from these opening verses of 1 John. First of all, there's a connection between what the community believes and proclaims and what they have experienced themselves. What they have heard, what they have seen with their eyes, and what they have touched with their hands, they say, they aren't just saying like we say the Apostles' Creed to get up without even thinking about it. We just rattle off a bunch of doctrines. In 1 John, he says, we are passing on to you what we have heard, what we have seen with our own eyes, what we have touched with our own hands. This is what we have experienced ourselves. Now let me tell you about it. What a great way to view the faith. We are reminded that this faith of ours is not one in which we simply believe certain things with our minds or just feel certain things with our hearts, but it is a faith which we experience in the flesh and blood of our lives every day. The Greek word which we usually see translated as believe or believe, and we think of that in terms of, well, we have this list of doctrines that we go through, but that word in Greek is probably better translated as having faith in or having trust in. We don't just believe in the existence of God. We don't just believe in the existence of the risen Christ. We have faith in Him. We trust in Him. We follow Him. I imagine in the story of Annie Cadell that her beliefs, what she would have said she believed, her kind of her doctrines in life and why she felt it was her right to put up this Confederate flag in the midst of a black neighborhood, but her beliefs were at great odds with what she was experiencing in the life that she was living with her neighbors until a sudden heart attack changed her ways of thinking and her priorities. On the other hand, sometimes we say and claim to believe all the right things, but we don't live it out. We don't put it into action. So then John goes on to describe what we experience in Christ as, quote, the word of life, which seems to convey two things, a double meaning, and he's great at that. One is the word that became flesh and dwelled among us. That is the word of life. Jesus himself is literally the word of life. We know the ways of God in Jesus, who has fleshed them out and made them something to be seen and heard. The other aspect of this life is our own. These ways of Jesus, this life that Jesus has revealed to us, is one for us to live and be a part of as well. The word of life. In the verses after that, John speaks of God as light, like I spoke about with the kids. God is light, and how we need to walk in the light ourselves. A pastor one time held a children's time in his church. It was an old church, a big cathedral-looking church. There were large stained glass windows up and down the side aisles depicting the lives of various biblical people and saints. And he made the point that the Bible actually describes all the members of the church as saints, not just a few elevated individuals that were particularly good, but all of us in the New Testament are proclaimed as saints. And he asked the children then, do they know what a saint is? What would you say a saint is? And one of the little girls pointed up to the window and said, the saints are the people that the light shines through. What a great and simple description of what we are called to be. The people that the light shines through. And then we read that one aspect of living in the light is to be aware of our own sin. The ways in us that block that light.
from shining through.
This doesn't mean focusing on the sins of others, as we often like to do. Pointing out our disagreements with other people out there, or judging them. But this means being aware of our own sin. He says, if we say we have no sin, we deceive ourselves, and the truth is not in us. Instead of following our old ways, we are to follow the commands of Jesus and to walk in His light. To walk as He walked is what John says. It is good to remember that we ourselves are not the light because we do sin, but we seek to reflect the light. We seek to allow the light to shine through us. And the love and the grace and the healing and the life of Christ. That is what John's community was attempting to do in those days after Easter. And that is our goal as well as we live these days after Easter. We are walking in the path of the crucified and risen Christ, who walks with us as we make our way, a new way, and a new life together.